On This Week in Enterprise Tech, Sandy snuffs servers, and it's a freaking tablet extravaganza. Twiet on the set.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for the following show is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech, Episode 17, recorded November 5, 2012. Tablet Tool Time. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate with colleagues and clients from anywhere. You can share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use promo code ENTERPRISE. And by Lantronics, maker of the XPrint server. Print from your iPad, iPhone, or any iOS device to virtually any printer. For more information, visit xprintserver.com/twit and enter the coupon code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. And social media solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media in a systematic way with social media solutions from SAP. Learn more at sap.com/twit. Welcome to Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech. It's the show dedicated to the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and the geek who just wants to know how the world is hooked together. I'm your host, Father Robert Ballasair, the Digital Jesuit, your guide to all things in the enterprise. And as always, I am joined by a phenomenal panel, starting with the ever-present Mr. Brian Chi. Brian, the evangelist for ThinLinks.com in Honolulu, Hawaii. Brian, it's not so early for you anymore because Hawaii doesn't do that daylight saving stuff.
Yeah, so it's a little later in the morning. It's 10 a.m. instead of 9 a.m. Unfortunately, it is a very foggy day. It looks like a stage 3 smog alert in Los Angeles.
Oh, by the way, for those people who have not lived on the islands, can you explain to them what VOG is?
VOG is a combination of sulfur dioxide, carbon monoxide, and ash, volcanic ash. And it makes it look like it's foggy.
Right.
It's nasty stuff.
I remember it very fondly from my days on the island. I could only compare it to living next to a crematorium. Yes, it's really that disgusting. Yeah, but we're not here to talk about crematoriums. That's why we've got our next guest, Mr. Louis Maresca from Microsoft. Louis, thank you for coming back on. I have to say that with this episode, you are now the guest who has been on most often on Twiet. I don't know how that worked out.
It's been an honor, man.
Our things over at Microsoft. A couple of exciting things. You've got Surface, you've got Win 8, and, well, you've got something really big. What's happening tonight?
Halo.
That's right, Halo.
Oh, yeah.
Not strictly an enterprise-related news item, but I'm betting it's going to cause hours and hours and days of productivity loss. Go Halo.
You bet.
And always, the panel would not be complete unless rounded out by the very professional Mr. Curtis Franklin from Enterprise Efficiency. Curtis, coming to us from the left coast, how is, Florida doing?
Florida's doing great. We managed to avoid all of the tropical weather that pounded our brethren up in the Northeast. Winter temps, but for us, that's not bad. Mid-70s, peaceful, great time to be doing enterprise stuff here with the group at Twiet.
Springtime in Twiet with Enterprise. Got it. Now, the Enterprise Byte, I will admit to you, I was a little conflicted because I wanted to run a story of great importance, and that was that the United States government has basically killed the cloud. But there's a lot of legal issues in that, so I've set that aside until next week. And instead, we're running what was my first choice of stories, and that's all about disaster recovery, specifically about Squarespace. Chibert, have you heard about this story, how Squarespace employees had to lift in 5-gallon buckets fuel up to their generators on the roof to keep their servers up during Sandy?
Yeah, that's definitely going above and beyond. I'll tell you, man. Generators are a royal pain in the ass. You got to love them when they're working, and you got to love them when you need them. But, boy, they are a pain to feed and care for.
Right. And in this particular case, the problem that they had was the generators were on the roof, so they're fine. But the tanks and the pumps were in the basement because you don't want to keep combustible fluid on the roof of your building. That's just a recipe for disaster. So when their building flooded out, they lost their fuel supply. So they had employees who were taking 2 5-gallon buckets at a time up flights of steps to feed their generators. Now, I will say, as a geek, I couldn't imagine carrying 1 5-gallon bucket of fuel. So, Curtis, what do you think this says about disaster preparedness in general? I mean, should they have considered that maybe having fuel in a place that will flood out wasn't the best thing to do?
I'm reminded of a scene from a movie I saw about the Apollo 1 disaster, when someone was asked in a congressional hearing what the failure was. They kept wanting to know what really failed. And the head of engineering finally said, it was a failure of imagination. We never imagined that this particular set of circumstances would occur and go wrong. That's where most enterprise business continuity or disaster recovery plans fail. Not because something hasn't worked the way you thought it would work, because in most cases, they will fit the bill just right. It's when we don't imagine that something's going to happen. In this case, they imagined, possibly after what happened in Japan after the last tsunami, that a generator could be flooded out. They knew that was bad, so they put the generator on the roof. But they didn't imagine that something would come along that would also affect their ability to get fuel to that generator. That's why it's so important to practice going through simulated emergency tests or sets is critical. The federal government emergency responders do that once or twice a year. Companies should really do that on a regular basis to test their emergency planning against a scenario that someone outside the company brings in, just to see what you've failed to think about.
I absolutely love that idea that you need to imagine the worst case scenario, because most of the time when someone submits a worst case scenario to us, we just kind of laugh it off and say, okay, well, what are the realistic things that are going to happen? Lou, you deal with an enterprise that has a lot of gear and probably has some very imaginative disaster recovery scenarios on the books. What kind of things do people fail to imagine?
So the way we do it, like, for instance, in our CRM app, we do it regionally. So, like, for instance, if something fails on one coast, let's say the East Coast, we're able to fail over, you know, like, let's say to, like, the, you know, the middle of the country or to the other Pacific coast. But a lot of the times what they don't handle is, for instance, there could be a lot of traffic on in the Midwest or even in the Pacific side that could cause that failover to be not very good for people on the East Coast. So those are things that are unforeseeable that you can't really handle all the time. So, you know, but, you know, basically, like Kurt said, basically you have to just keep testing things and just keep ensuring that things are up when they need to be up, and that's really all you can do.
Chief, but I want to toss this back over to you. Living on an island that does deal with at least a tsunami warning a year, what kind of scenarios do you have on the books? What kind of disasters are you prepared for?
Well, the Aloha Cabled Observatory actually has off-site storage. The Makaha Cable landing site for AT&T is a facility not many people get to go into, but I can say that it's got really, really, really big banks of batteries. Unfortunately, it is below ground, so it could potentially flood. We have multiple landing sites and so forth. Most of the time, what we do is we try and make sure that the data is backed up in multiple places. You know, we all say it doesn't exist if it's not backed up in 3 places. We tend to stick stuff into salt mines in Utah, or at least get it to other institutions, so that if something nasty does happen, the irreplaceable data at least isn't lost.
Curtis, that was actually a comment in the chat room that this was not necessarily a failure of planning, but it was a failure of co-location. They were wondering, why would the server room going down in New York take down all of Squarespace? Shouldn't they be located at geographically distant points across the United States?
Well, you know, that's one of the original benefits that was touted for the cloud, that you could be geographically dispersed. And that is certainly the ideal situation. Now, living in a place like Florida, I will tell you that there are an awful lot of companies here who intentionally choose backup sites that are well separated from us geographically because of things just like this. And to be honest, Hurricane Katrina was a huge wake-up call for a lot of companies, because we're aware that there were, for example, companies that had followed great procedure, put backup tapes in safety deposit boxes in the bank in town, only to have the entire bank washed away along with their data center. So geographic dispersal is optimal, but it's also expensive. And so in many cases, you run into a case of cost-benefit analysis. That's where things get complicated, and that's when hindsight always comes into play. You know, the value of continuous services is always greater once they've been lost than they are when the loss is still in the potential category.
Chiebert, let me go back to you really quickly about this. There was a very good point made by Spring Rubber about what this says about the cloud. I mean, if a single point of failure seems to take down these large enterprises with regularity, at least once or twice a year, we're hearing about Amazon or Netflix or Squarespace being threatened by a single point of failure. What happened to the promise of the cloud, the always up, always available, always safe?
You know, the whole promise of the cloud still really hasn't been fulfilled yet. A lot of people are still getting used to the concept of global load balancing, global failovers, getting used to the concepts of making sure the redundant pathways are available and actually doing tests. The number one bitch I have with corporate America today is they are always believing the salesman. Well, not always, but close enough that they don't do any testing of their own anymore. The sales of network testers have dropped to a historical low, and it just tells me that there's too much trust in what salespeople tell you, and salespeople are always going to blow smoke up your whatevers.
Volcano.
Yeah.
Okay. Lou, I want to give you the last word on this, because I think you can give us a unique perspective. That is, as part of a huge enterprise that has multiple locations around the world, do you think disaster recovery is made easier or more difficult by the fact that a lot of your mission-critical data exists in several spaces across the world?
Oh, it's very difficult. I mean, it creates more difficulty because you're basically replicating data over multiple sites, hundreds, even thousands of sites. So, something fails on the East Coast, you need to make sure that that user's data, even something that it just saved a couple seconds ago, is replicated somewhere else. So when they pick their data, or when they pick up right where they left off, hopefully everything's there. So it's actually more difficult, I would say. The more sites you get, the more trouble you have replicating data over those geographic locations as well as different sites.
So the bottom line is, we give kudos to the guys over at Squarespace for their efforts in making that happen. And I think this is a topic we're going to have to revisit. Can I ask for the three of you to come back when we actually do a disaster preparedness episode of TWiET?
Definitely.
You bet.
Would love to.
Yep. And, going on to Lou's last point about geographically distant locations, I think that might be a good entry to speak to about one of our sponsors, and that's Citrix with GoToMeeting with HD Faces. You've heard me talk about them before. GoToMeeting with HD Faces is the easiest way to have an online meeting complete with high-definition audio and video, to be able to share your documents with one click, to be able to set things up with nary a thought. Now, it's well known that our nonverbal communication says more than the words that come out of our mouths. It's all about the wayward glance, or the nod of a head, or the twisting of an eye. We pick up from these cues, and that's what allows us to communicate so well. We know what people are thinking, even when they're not telling us. So what happens when the team that you're working with, your team of colleagues, of collaborators, or your clients aren't in the same location? They're in different buildings, they're in different cities, they're in different countries. Well, you could settle for a telephone conference. You could cancel out all of that nonverbal communication and just hope that you're getting the message that they actually want you to get. Or you could ask them to come to you. Of course, that's expensive and time-consuming. There's a third option. It's the option. And that is to use GoToMeeting with HD Faces, the way to meet face-to-face with colleagues and clients, no matter where they are. GoToMeeting from Citrix takes online meetings a giant step forward by combining an easy-to-use online interface with the highest quality HD video conferencing. With one click, you can share your screen. With another click, you can pass control of the meeting to one of the attendees, and all while hearing and seeing each other in crisp, clean HD. I do another podcast called The Book Guys, led by Paul Alvis. It's a simple weekly audio-only podcast, but we spend most of our time fiddling with various ways to connect each other. And we've tried a lot of different solutions. They've never worked well. Not too long ago, with the crew on its last nerve, I suggested GoToMeeting with HD Faces. After all, since it works for all of my team meetings, I figured it should work for a podcast. Since that first day, we haven't looked back. GoToMeeting not only gave us a high-quality audio link-up, but it also made scheduling our shows as easy as sending an email. We also love the fact that GoToMeeting installs with a simple, lightweight client, and that someone can join in the show by calling in, combining the best of telephone and online meetings. Not only has GoToMeeting made our shows much easier to produce, but we've found that having the video interface, even for an audio-only podcast, has increased the quality of the show. By seeing each other in HD, it's easier for us to riff off of one another. It's easier to get in the vibe to communicate. We swear by GoToMeeting, and I know you will too. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter the promo code ENTERPRISE. Remember to use the promo code ENTERPRISE, and we thank Citrix for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Now, let's get to the case study. Normally, this is where we would have a pre-produced segment, but we're not going to have time for that because it's a tablet extravaganza. That's right. We want to, with this distinguished panel, show you all the ways that we use tablets in the enterprise. Now, we've alluded to this in the past with our BYOD episodes, our Bring Your Own Device. But now we want to show you how we're actually going to use these tablets when we do enterprise tasks, everything from network administration to productivity software. And we're going to start with this. This is one of my favorites. I can get a product cam shot over here. This is a Acer A700 tablet. It's just a standard Android tablet. Very nice. I use it pretty extensively. But there's a free tool called Wi-Fi Analyzer. Now, the nice thing about Wi-Fi Analyzer is that it shows you the a representation of what's going on with your Wi-Fi setup. You can see here that we've got multiple peaks correlating to the 1, the 6, and the 11 channels of Wi-Fi. That's where you should have your Wi-Fi set up. And you can see all the different curves represent different APs, different access points that have popped up. The nice thing about this is that I have it on all my devices, on my phone, on my tablets, and it allows me to do everything from direction finding, if I'm looking for a particular AP, to looking at signal strength, to looking at representation of signal strength over time. It's a fantastically awesome diagnostic tool, something that I've used pretty much for the last 2 years. Chibert, you've played a little bit with Wi-Fi Analyzer. How have you found it?
Oh, it's great. You know, especially since I've been able to find all the interference at my cousin's place, trade shows. It's awesome. You know, we use it all the time. You know, even when you're just setting up someone's home router, just having the ability to know what channels are open and which channels are really plugged up is a great help.
Yeah. Now, something I will add to this is this little phenomenon here. If you look at the product camera again, this phone actually supports both 2.4 and 5 gigahertz because it's got the radio built in. You just toggle the 5 gigahertz radio and suddenly you can see what's going on in the 5 gigahertz spectrum. There has been a very disconcerting movement with a lot of these devices to remove the 5 gigahertz radio. I'm not sure why we're seeing that. It's happening in a lot of Android tablets. It's happened in the Nexus 7. That's something that I really hope they reverse, because the absence of 5 gig, especially on a device that relies on wireless to connect, that's a no-go. Curtis, have you seen that too? Have you seen some of these supposedly higher-end devices removing 5 gig from their Wi-Fi?
I have, and you know, I think it's a mistake. I'm a big fan of 5 gig over 2.4 gig. I mean, the 2.4 gig part of the spectrum is just awfully, awfully crowded. It really is the Wild West. 5 gig has a lot of advantages, and I think it's a mistake every time an enterprise vendor or an enterprise decides to step away from 5 gig and place all their bets on 2.4 gig.
Especially with how congested it is. Now, I will say this. This is something that I find particularly cool. This is a standard Nexus 7 tablet. If your tablet doesn't support 5 gig Wi-Fi, at the very least, it should support something like this. This is an Ethernet adapter that I modded to fit into the standard USB port at the bottom of a Nexus 7. The cool thing about this is when you plug it in, it allows you to connect to a standard Ethernet connection to your network. I think, something that should be present on all tablets, especially if you're going to be using it for any sort of network maintenance, network utilities. An Ethernet adapter is an absolutely vital part to your tablet experience. Lou, one of the nice things about Windows 8 tablets is that they're Windows 8 computers. Do we see a lot of the Microsoft products supporting Ethernet adapters?
Yeah, so when the WinRT itself does support some USB Ethernet adapters. I'm not entirely sure what those are. There are specific models. I'm actually looking into that for Cheebert. And there are obviously Windows Pro, so Windows 8 Pro tablets all support, you know, the whatever drivers are supported on Windows 8 will be supported on Windows 8 Pro. So for instance, the Surface Pro will support that as well. So yeah, they definitely do have support for them.
Yeah. So this is all a long way for me to get around to the point that Wi-Fi Analyzer is probably first on my list when I think about tools that I would use on a tablet in the enterprise. Cheebert, you've got something on the iPad because we want to represent all platforms. What's your first take?
Well, I tell you, I ran a story on InfoWorld a little while back that somehow or another got really, really popular. And it's a slideshow. One of my favorite tools is called NetScanner. Now, NetScanner allows me to go in and dig up what's on the network. Not only that, it'll actually tell me if I've got a NAT device. But it, more importantly, what gives me an enterprise spin on this is I can actually query the SNMP. And one of my favorite things is going into convention centers or offices, and I'll scan the Wi-Fi network and find out just how many printers still have public and private for their SNMP, which is kind of disturbing.
Okay. Well, now, one of the nice things about NetScanner is, that it shows you a lot of the data that you couldn't get with just using a standard tablet interface. When you've been using NetScanner in an environment like, say, Interop, does it tip over because it's not what you expect out of a Soho or even a home office?
You know, I don't know yet. The New York show wasn't as good a judge because it's a much smaller show. NetScanner didn't tip over there. Though all bets are off when I go to Vegas. When we have that many devices, who knows what's going to happen. I'm looking forward to trying it.
Okay. Now, your second choice is getting a little bit away from network tools. Mine was also a network tool. And you're going into RDP, Mocha RDP. First, for all the kids at home, could you explain what RDP is?
Well, RDP comes with just about every copy of Windows since God knows when. I think it goes all the way back to the Windows 95 days. And it's remote desktop protocol. Think of it as just remote control. So if you offer up your machine, you go and say, I need some help from a friend. What it's doing is it's actually opening an RDP session to your friend so they can see what's on the desktop. Now, more and more as people do what's called lights out in data centers where there are no monitor and keyboard, it's going through either a KVM or something. You don't have a console to sit in front of. So remote desktop allows you to get to the console of the machine. Now, having RDP on an iPad or a tablet in general is a pretty powerful tool because there's been more than once where someone said, I get a voicemail or something saying, you know, such and such server is having problems. You know, what happened? You know, oh my God, the world is ending. I've actually gotten onto my iPad using the 3G. It's really slow, but I use the 3G. I was actually sitting at Benihana with some friends. I actually logged into a server, found out someone had just apparently blown their password. So I reset their password for them, turned their account back on, and life is good again. RDP is an amazingly good tool, and Mocha RDP has this really nice feature that I can actually pinch so that if the server has considerably more resolution than the iPad can display, I can at least see the entire screen, or I can scroll it around so I can get to different places. And yes, everybody, it does support right click. You just got to play with the buttons.
Curtis B in the chat room is saying how he's used RDP even from an iPhone. And I think I could back that up. I've used RDP on my Android phones before, even something like a Nexus or a Samsung Galaxy S2. It's not just a tool that's good for using in a pinch, though. It's something that most people in enterprise are going to use at some point or another to get back into their machines or to access something on their servers. Mocha RDP, is there a reason why you chose that over all the other RDP programs and applications out on the market?
Yeah, a lot of the free ones don't support right-click, or they do it badly. A lot of the other free ones also don't allow you to pinch and see the entire screen. Being able to see, you know, everything in perspective is a pretty powerful tool. And I was actually on the free version for quite a while and decided that, you know, maybe I need to vote with my dollars. So I paid, you know, I think it was like $10. Well worth it.
All right. So from Mocha RDP, we're going to IVM Control, also on the iPad. You want to explain a little bit about why you chose that app?
Well, more and more I'm going into VMware. Fortunately or unfortunately, VMware is right now in the virtualization world, the 1,000-pound gorilla, and the one that I have to support. Being able to start and stop virtual machines, being able to go and find out what kind of resources they're using, all without having to go through the latency that you would have with a typical RDP session, gives me the ability to go and find out what the heck is happening to my VMware cluster. I'm actually really looking forward to being able to try and use some of the snap-ins for Hyper-V on my Windows RT tablet. That sounds like a really big win, if you ask me.
Now, looking at these applications that you've chosen for the iPad, we've got NetScanner, we've got Mocha RDP, we've got IVM Control. What are the prices for these apps, or has it been too long?
I'm actually looking at the one for IVM Control on the slideshow. It's $9.99. Mocha RDP, I think, was also $9.99. I'd have to go dig through that. There it is. No, $5.99, sorry.
$5.99.
And then some of the other tools are actually free. I've actually got a top 15 tools for the iPad sitting up on the InfoWorld site. And please increase my hit count.
Yes. With that plea, I want to even out the operating system playing field here. We've talked about Android. We've talked about iOS. And so I think now we need to move over to the Surface, WinRT. That means you, Louis Maresca. What do you got for us on WinRT? What are the features, the functions, the applications that you think make it a suitable enterprise platform?
Sure. So there's been a slight misconception that, you know, WinRT or even the Surface doesn't really have a place in the enterprise world. What people forget is the functionality of Windows 8 is kind of backing it and adds a lot of support for things. For instance, when it comes to network connectivity for consumer devices like bring your own device, BYD, essentially there's kind of two pieces: how to grant access to the corporate network over VPN and how to ensure IT can grant access in a secure way. So like, for instance, the great news about WinRT is it includes VPN client, which interoperates with Microsoft, Cisco, Checkpoint, and Juniper services. And it also allows the VPN protocol, just like the x86 version of Windows 8. Like, for instance, I think it's L2TP, PPTP, SSTP, and IPsec. So it does support all of those. And it allows you, it's pretty easy configuration. You just basically type, go to the start menu, type VPN, go to the click on settings, and then click on setup VPN connection, and bam, you can set up a VPN connection using the wizard. Another quick tip too is that, like, let's say an IT department doesn't want to have a user go through all those settings. The great thing about WinRT as well is it also supports PowerShell. And what PowerShell is a runtime, a scripting runtime that wraps around the .NET framework. You can write really quick scripts. The end user can download the script from the IT department, and then bam, they can auto configure VPN and allow that to work.
Nice. Okay, so we've got full VPN support with the Surface RT. That's also a feature that's available on iOS and Android. So, you know, obviously there is a little bit of catering to the enterprise crowd there. What about you've got remote app listed here. What's that all about?
Sure. So remote app is basically is allowing you to run x86 software locally. It's what they call session-based apps, and it leverages remote desktop services running on, let's say, Windows 2008 R2 or Windows Server 2012, and basically allows you to run your apps remotely and as if they were running locally. And the greatest example I've seen of this is someone using Photoshop on their Surface. So basically they were on the plane and they were using a Surface, and they were, you know, running over the plane's internet, they were running Photoshop. And I was completely blown away. I was like, where did you get that? And they were basically saying it's just remote app. It's just remotely accessing the app over the network.
Nice, nice. And multi-user support also built into the RT, yes?
Yes. Multi-user support, smart card support. That's another great thing about being able to handle remote desktop through secure gateway using smart cards. And then one big thing, native printer support.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, that's one of the things that is becoming more and more important. And that is, as we go and take these devices into the enterprise, you know, into the office, we expect to be able to do everything with them that we could do with a laptop or a desktop. And printing is one of those sore spots. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But how does Surface RT handle that? I mean, does it just have all the printing backing of Windows 8?
So it has a majority of it. Like, for instance, if you want to do a network printer, it's very easy. Most of the default drivers are there for different classes of printers. So, for instance, a lot of the HP inkjet printers use the same class of driver. So that's supported right away. Some of the Canon units use the same class of driver. So as soon as you find the drive, find the printer on the network, just like you do on a normal Windows 8 Pro, Windows 7 Pro, you'll be able to then immediately add that printer to the Surface and print right away. So it's very similar to the Windows 8 support. You don't have as full featured as Windows 8, but you do have the capability of doing it.
I will say that it's nice that Microsoft thought about printers, including that support, into a device that is arguably supposed to be for, well, the prosumer. But for non-Surface RT products, for non-Win 8 products, printing is still problematic. Specifically, I'm thinking about iOS devices. Now, there are a couple of AirPrint printers out there. You know, they support the protocol that allows iPads and iPhones and iPod Touches to communicate with printers, but they're few and far between. Most of the time, we end up, kind of hacking it, finding ways around the limitation. The ways that I've seen in the past have been people copy and pasting their document into an email that they send to themselves and then print off on a printer, or sending an attachment, or working in something like Evernote so that I can open it up on another laptop or a desktop that's actually connected to a computer. My personal favorite hack was someone I saw using an iPad that had been jailbroken. They had the little USB storage dongle at the bottom, and they were saving their files to a USB stick and then taking it out and plugging it into the laptop, printing it off of there. Now, you could do all that, or you could try one of these things. Now, this is the new XPrint server from Lantronics, and it's specifically dedicated for those people who are using iOS devices, any iOS device. That's your iPad, that's your iPhone, that's your iPod Touch. The idea is simple. Instead of having to build AirPrint into each and every single printer, why not build all that functionality into a device that plugs into your network and lets you connect with ease to every printer that you have access to? You could, again, do all those workarounds. You could spend your time create a couple of headaches trying to figure out how to make your existing printers work without something like the XPrint server, but why would you do that? You see, the XPrint server prints directly from iOS. There are no apps to buy. There is no software to load. There are no configurations to make. It supports more than 4,000 of the most popular printers on the market. Its setup is also really, really simple. The XPrint server automatically discovers the available printers and makes them usable by your iOS device. Now, for the more advanced users, it also includes a configuration menu so that you can customize your Xprint server to work the way that you want it to. This is especially important for those people who work in enterprise who may have a bit of a kludge going on in their network setup. You know, they don't want just to have every printer available to every user. They want to be able to customize the way that their network is supposed to work. And that's why I love working with Lantronix, because they know enterprise. A single Xprint server supports multiple printers and virtually unlimited iOS devices. Now, the Home Edition is $100. It's $99, and it supports up to 8 USB and 2 network printers. The Network Edition, which I'm holding, is $149 and supports an unlimited number of network printers. It will even work with your multifunction printers and your large printers, basically making every printer in your office an iOS device. So here's what I want you to do. If you have an iOS device, if you have an iPhone, if you have an iPad, if you have an iPod Touch, I want you to visit xprinterserver.com/twit for more information and to buy. And we've got a special offer, of course. We've got a special offer because that's how much we love you. Use the coupon code TWIT to receive free shipping on your order. Remember, visit xprinterserver.com/twit, and at checkout, enter the coupon code TWIT. We thank Lantronix for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Let's get back into it. We're talking more about tablets, and this time I'm bringing back an old goodie. If you show my product cam, people who have been watching Twite from the beginning will know what this is. This is a MetaGeek WiSpy DBX, a fantastic little device that is essentially a spectrum analyzer for the 2.4 and 5 gigahertz range. Now, when we showed this off, it was on a laptop. And that's because it requires something like Windows and an open interface like Windows in order to work properly. As you can see, I have it working just fine on this Windows 8 tablet from Acer. This is a Acer W700. The nice thing about this tablet supports native USB connections. I don't have to kludge it. I don't have to hack anything. And it also supports the runtime packages that I need to run all the networking tools that I'm accustomed to running on Windows. Again, this is a tool that allows you to look at the environment in which your tablet exists. I believe we've got an actual screen here that we're going to show you so that you can see exactly what the environment looks like. This is showing you that in my 2.4 gigahertz range, here in the brick house, it's relatively busy. As you can see, we've got noise on all of our channel bands, and we've also got a lot of APs that are operating, most of which do not belong to Twit, which explains, again, why if you're a guest, it takes so long for wireless to work properly. Now, one of the great things about using something like a Windows tablet, you know, an actual Windows 8 operating system running on top of a touch surface, is that all the software that I'm used to running will work natively. That includes something like Wireshark. I was actually able to get Wireshark working on this, and with a USB Ethernet adapter, I was able to capture packets just like I would on a laptop or a desktop. In my mind, this makes it a phenomenally useful tool. Chibert, what do you think about the ability to take some of the hardware tools and software tools that we've been accustomed to on laptops and desktops and bring them into a vertical device like a tablet?
Yeah, where's mine? I want one.
Okay. Well, I can give you the hookup for that. But also, maybe we should talk to Curtis about this. Curtis, do you see something like this becoming popular? I mean, with enterprise professionals being able to take something like this and put it on a lightweight computer that lasts forever and ever, goes on battery, and get all the functionality out of a tablet when doing diagnostics that they would normally need a laptop for, is there a market for that?
Oh, I think there's definitely a market for that in the field service area, in the IT professional area, in the entire IT staff. You're already seeing this when you go to shows like Microsoft Tech Ed, like SAP's Tech Ed. The geeks have the tablets, the ability to have the tools that they need, especially when they don't have to do serious hacking to make them available, I think is an absolute win.
Right. And there are a couple of questions in the chat room. This is from MetaGeek. So it's the same company that makes this Wi-Spy device. This is called Channelizer Pro. I'm running the demo right now, so you get 15 days free if you just want to play with it. And it will actually work with the card that's in your laptop. It won't give you nearly as much information as you would from getting their actual hardware device. But as you can see, it's running just fine on my Windows 8 tablet. This is an Acer W700. So it's a Windows 8 computer built into a tablet format. Lou, when I look at something like this and I look at something like the Surface RT, I got to ask you, let me be blunt. Why would I choose an RT over something like this, which gives me the full functionality of, say, a laptop?
You know, a lot of people basically choose the RT because they have specific power constraints. They want the device to last longer. You know, WinRT handles the battery a lot better than some of the Pro would handle, you know, depending on, you know, what Intel kind of gives us the next couple months or if next couple years from low power processor wise or AMD wise. But, you know, for right now, ARM processors do handle better on power, as well as they handle the capability of having smaller form factors, not having to for heat issues. So, for instance, you know, an RT tablet is going to be a lot smaller, a lot thinner than a Pro tablet might be from that standpoint. So, I mean, other than that, a lot of people say that Pro is kind of the way they need to go. They need the full support, the full backing of Windows 8, being able to run tools like you were talking about, the analyzer tools and maps and any of the network analyzing tools can all run on the standard Windows 8 protocol and Windows 8 standards. So that would be one of the main reasons to choose Pro if you had that need.
Cheever, let me go back to you really quickly and ask you about using this in the vertical market. So in an environment like Interop, often we move around with our laptops so we can plug in and do quick network diagnostics if we don't have some sort of multi-tester. Could something like a Windows 8 tablet or a Surface tablet with appropriate tools become the de facto standard for network tools in an environment like Interop?
Actually, I don't see why not. Especially since Lou sent me a link to a USB Ethernet adapter that should work. See, the whole trick is right now there's no way to install drivers on Windows RT, so it has to be native support within the system. So we're basically digging around. There's a lot of things available, just, you know, maybe the documentation hasn't quite surfaced yet. So one of the things that I need on a tablet is being able to have some sort of serial device, Bluetooth or USB, so that I can put the initial IP setup onto a switch or a router and then go on via the wired Ethernet so that I can bring up the initial browser and start configuring and then download the basic config. Once those types of pieces start arriving, that in SSH, I think the RT tablet could be a massive win. Especially since they're inexpensive enough that you can even afford to give them to interns and so forth, you know, people that you wouldn't normally put a full laptop on for your IT group.
One last note before we move away from this. Again, I'm loving it more and more from this Win 8 tablet from Acer. If you look really quickly, it also supports, because it's a Windows product, of course it will support remote desktop connection. We were talking about this a little bit earlier. This is one of the apps that you can get for an iOS device or an Android device. It's actually built into Windows, which is, this is fantastic. I mean, it's one of these things that you don't think about until you don't have it or until you have to buy the application. If it's built into the product already, of course, you're going to use it. Now, we've got more because we've been talking mainly about tools for network surveys and tools for network configuration and tools for connecting back to your network securely. But Curtis, you're going to bring us up on the productivity side. Why don't you kick us off?
Well, I use a tablet very heavily. I mean, I'm very portable. I spend a lot of time working in places besides my office. And so the ability to do the work that I have to do on a daily basis is very important to me. Now, I'm using an iOS device, the new iPad, not the iPad 4. I'm not quite that up to date, but the new iPad. And I've developed a set of tools that let me do everything I need to do. Number one is Evernote. Evernote is sort of my electronic brain. It lets me remember everything I need to remember and pass information back and forth between my desktop, my tablet, my smartphone, my secondary desktop. Everything's there. Evernote is a killer product for keeping track of what I need on a day-to-day basis. Next, and similar to this, is Dropbox. Now, for many enterprise users, for many enterprise IT departments, Dropbox is a nightmare because, frankly, there are some governance issues. There are some issues about security outside the corporate firewall. But I do know of a lot of enterprise users who are making use of Dropbox the same way I use it, and that is to pass information back and forth between multiple devices. Especially in an era of BYOD, Dropbox is a great application and service. Now, making use of the information that's out there on Dropbox, I've got a couple of things that are important to me. One is called Docs2Go. Docs2Go gives me much of the functionality of the Windows Office, the Microsoft Office suite on my iOS tablet. Now, there are several options for doing this, but I have found that Docs2Go Pro is my choice. I can edit and create PowerPoint presentations, Excel spreadsheets, Word documents, all on Docs2Go Premium, synchronize them back to my Dropbox account, and I'm in great shape. Now, this one is, for an iOS application, kind of expensive. It's $16.99, I see there. It was $14.99 when I bought it. You can find it on sale once in a while. The other thing that I like when I'm not working with a Word format is Textastic. Now, if you do HTML or text editing, and I do that on a daily basis, Textastic is a super program for letting you do text editing. It has a mildly funky interface for dealing with all of the various keys that you would normally have on a keyboard. But once you get used to that, and frankly, it takes about 60 seconds, it's fast, it's easy, and I have found that the support team for this, the creators of the software, are dynamite about answering questions, making sure that you have the information you need. Once again, this works with Dropbox. It will work with Google Docs. A great program if you have the need to create HTML, XML, or text documents on a regular basis. Now, the next two products make things a little bit simpler for me. One is Chrome. I like using it rather than using the Safari browser. Why? Because it synchronizes with the Chrome on my laptop. And that means I can get access to all of the pages that I've had open, all of my bookmarks, everything, if I'm willing to synchronize that with Chrome. Now, again, for some enterprise users, this creates a security issue because of the information passing back and forth. But I found it to be a great productivity tool. The next one is Hootsuite. If you do anything with social media, especially with multiple accounts, Hootsuite is a great tool. With that, I'm able to do a pair of Twitter accounts, my Facebook account, my LinkedIn account, my Google page, all from one place, follow people, look at conversations, a great tool. And it has a professional version that the social media people at my company are able to use to keep track of what I'm doing, to help me out, to synchronize our accounts. The final tool that I use on a nearly daily basis is called Bento. Bento is a great little personal file keeper. It is a database program, similar, to be honest, to Access in the Windows world. I use it for a lot of different things, from keeping track of the people that I keep track of for my radio programs, to sources that I use for stories, to personal health information. Bento is inexpensive. It synchronizes, again, between my laptop, my tablet, and my phone, great for keeping up with stuff. Now, are there any things that I wish I had but I don't? You bet. And top of that list is something that worked well for Office Communicator. My company uses Microsoft Office Communicator as a way of keeping track, and there just isn't a great Office Communicator client for iOS. I've seen several things that have pieces of the functionality, but nothing that is fully there. Once that's there, my life will be nearly complete from a professional standpoint. That's what I use for getting my job done on a day-to-day basis on my tablet.
Fantastic. Now, that's production. We're going to take one more gander onto the networking side. Chibert, I believe you've got a tool that I can actually demo on my side as you talk about. What's it called?
Fing.
Fing?
Fing.
Fing, okay.
Play on ping.
Okay.
Basically, it's ping, but on steroids. It's got things like traceroute. When you do a ping, it'll actually do a lookup on the DNS. It'll tell you the MAC address. It gives you a lot richer set of tools so you can figure out what the heck is going on with your network. And it actually will go and do a search on your subnet. And what's nice about Fing is that it's not just the local subnet. There's a lot of tools that'll give you information on the wireless that you're on. Unfortunately, that's kind of useless. I need to be able to go and find out what's on other networks. So you can actually put in a subnet mask or a sub range. It'll actually go and search that range for you. Makes it quite a bit more useful. This was an amazing catch by my IT group. So shout out to Ross Ishida for finding that one and bringing it to my attention.
Doesn't Fing want root access?
Fing wants root access, but, you know, on something like a Nexus 7, especially once you start getting into the Jelly Bean world, or at least Ice Cream Sandwich, rooting a tablet is not that big a deal anymore. It does make me cringe, though, because from a security standpoint, rooting a tablet means you've opened up some resources that an enterprise IT person may not want wild on their network. So that might be something you might want to keep under close tabs.
I just realized I had a moment of terror there when I thought I was exposing external IP addresses. These are all internal, so forget it. Now, you have one more networking tool, and I don't have it loaded on my my tablet, but I played with it last night. Tell us a little bit about, what is it, Network Mapper?
Yep, Network Mapper is does some things that are similar to Fing, but it's a little different only because if you have a device like a firewall that's running NAT behind it, it will tell you that. So if someone in your organization has dropped in a router unbeknownst to you, it'll at least tell you that, yes, this device has a hidden network behind it. Pretty useful. And especially anyone that has to support a trade show or a big meeting, being able to tell whether people are starting to NAT and potentially grabbing their undue share of bandwidth is a pretty useful tool.
Well, that's pretty much all the time we have to show off our choices for applications on tablets in the enterprise. But I don't want to leave without saying a word about one of our last sponsors, and that is SAP. That's right. This episode of TWiET is partially brought to you by Social Media Solutions from SAP. Now, these days, the conversation is always on social media. It's about what a blogger is saying about your product, or someone has posted on Twitter or Facebook about some decision your company has made. We make or break brands depending on what happens in social media. And that's why it's important for you to take a look at Social Media Solutions for SAP. It's common for people to comment or complain about brands in public. Social Media Solutions from SAP helps large enterprises listen and engage with social media in a systematic way. Now, it's broken up into two pieces. The listening component searches the social web in a smart way to know what is being said about your brand. It captures and reports on conversations about relevant terms, passions, patterns, and competitors. It surfaces sentiment and the intensity of it. For example, do your customers like, love, or dislike something? It also helps you build better products by incorporating real-time customer feedback into your innovation efforts. It helps you identify customers who are ready to buy based on buying signals that they are sending via social media, and then it uses natural language processing, or NLP, to intelligently and automatically know the difference between similar statements, such as, this app has never been good, or this app has never been this good. The engaging component is the second part of SAP's social media solution service. It helps you improve customer support by allowing you to set the rules about which messages route to whom and how they should be handled. For example, if someone tweets a technical support problem, you can get the software to the right person and to fix the problem through social media. SAP Media Solutions from SAP gives you an accurate and real-time understanding of your brand's social media performance. If you manage the social media presence for a large regional or national enterprise, we want you to get in touch with SAP. You can find out more about social media solutions at sap.com/twit. And we thank SAP for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Now, before we go, I want to give our panelists a chance to shout out the things that they're involved with, the thing that they want our TWiT audience to take a look at. Let's start with you, Lou. Lou Maresca, what's going on at Microsoft, aside from a huge week of Halo hangovers? What projects do you can you talk about?
Sure. So what I work on is the Microsoft Dynamics CRM product. And just at Build Conference, they debuted a great interaction with the Surface app. So a Surface edition of the CRM app, as well as what they call the Windows Store version of the CRM app. Mary Jo has a great article on what we're debuting, and that's exactly what I've been working on lately.
We were kind of hoping to have her on, but she had to beg out at the last minute. Oh, Mary Jo, come back. But what about you, Curtis? What's going on in Florida? What do you have coming up on enterprise efficiency that you think our audience needs to know about?
Well, we are heading towards a busy fourth quarter of the year. We've got a lot of things going on with audio, with video, with our community, and I'd like to put out the word again. If you are an IT executive, if you're a CIO, a manager, a director, someone who helps set IT policy, I would love to talk with you, find out what your concerns are, and maybe even do a case study about you or use you in an article for enterprise efficiency. Let me know. The email address is franklin@enterpriseefficiency.com.
And you, Chibert, our geek on the volcano. What's going on? What do you want people to know about?
Me, I'm dizzy, as you can see by the birds flying around my head. It's going crazy trying to get ready to head to the mainland for vacation, long overdue vacation, use or lose. But I've got all these projects. One of the things that I'm desperately wanting to try and kick off is client Hyper-V. Being able to have a Windows 8 machine that's running a Type 1 hypervisor and be able to remote FX into it and leverage the GPU is an amazing, amazing tool. And I just can't wait to get my hands on that machine.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for giving us all your input. I mean, I think this was just what we needed, a rundown of services, applications, features that we're looking for in tablets that we bring into the enterprise. We aren't quite done yet. I do have a couple of messages. This is kind of like after a mass. You know, I got to send you out with some good news. And the good news is this. We are having a TWiT question and answer episode. That's right. Your questions, our answers right here. But if you want to participate, you need to go to our Reddit page. That's twiit.reddit.com. You'll be able to submit your questions. You'll be able to see the questions that other people have submitted and vote them up or down so we know which questions you want answered. Remember, there's no such thing as a stupid question, only stupid people. Now, also, please subscribe to us on iTunes. That's right. If you are catching us in any of the number of ways that you can get TWiT, but you haven't yet subscribed, that means you're going to miss some of the gadgety goodness that comes out each and every week. You can go to our show page at twit.tv/TWiT. You'll be able to find the drop-down menu that shows you all the different ways that you can get TWiT to your device each and every single week. It's going to go to your iPad or your iPhone, your Android tablet, whatever it might be. Choose the way that you want to consume the program because we want you to keep up with us. Also, if you are listening to this on a download, why not watch us live at least once? We tape every Monday at noon Pacific time in front of a live studio audience of thousands and a chat room of a million or so. If you do join us live, you'll also be able to play in chat room. That means you'll be able to submit comments to the host. We'll read your comments on the show, and we'll use it in our discussion. It's not just a show. It's a temporary community. Also, follow me on Twitter. If you follow me at twitter.com/PadreSJ, you'll be able to submit suggestions for future shows or give me comments about what's happened in the past. It's one of the best ways to keep in touch with the Digital Jesuit and everything that goes on TWIET. Also, as we announced last week, we are going to have a TWIET call-in show. If you've ever wanted to be on TWIET, if you think you have that secret that everyone must know about in the enterprise, if you think you can be the next great TWIET host, well, I can't guarantee you that, but why not try? Send me an email at padre@twit.tv. Post a link to my Twitter page that shows me a bit of why you want to be on the show. That shows me a YouTube link so that I can actually see you describing things that happen in your workplace, in your enterprise world, and we'll decide at the end of the year who gets to play. Now, before we go, I want to thank everyone here at the Brick House again. This is a fantastic crew. We've got Jason on the TD. He's doing all of our switching. We've got Carson, who's doing our producing. It is a fantastic place to be. And it's also where a lot of other TWIET shows take place. If you haven't seen all the TWIET shows, you need to drop by at our live feed, live.twit.tv, or just go to twit.tv and see what else happens in the Brick House. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire. And remember, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep TWIET.